All right, good morning, everybody. So I'm going to be talking to you about slow sound filters and our work on how they remove plant pathogens. This is part of SCR Clean Water 3 project. First, I need to acknowledge the co-authors in this presentation. This is not in any particular order, but I want to especially recognize Bruno Pitten and Jared Cisneros. They're our key staff researchers in my group that without them, I wouldn't be standing here today. Dr. Darren Havers, my co-PI with SRI and other projects at the South Coast Research and Extension Center. Aaron Irvine, his SRI Grant Johnson, manages our projects that we conduct down there. And Tammy Madrick has helped a lot with Grant on our projects. Eric Lee and Mike Harris are former master's students that did a lot of work that I'll show you today. Dr. Deb Matthews is a plant pathologist who helped us with the virus work that I'll show you, and Sarab Bugatti is her SRA, and fortunately we had the benefit of having Lloyd Nackley in our lab as a postdoc for a couple of years. So what is slow sand filtration? What we'll talk about today is what slow sand filtration is. We'll look at a couple of installed systems at nurseries, and we'll spend most of the time on the research results, of course. So slow sand filters can remove plant pathogens. They also can remove a lot of human pathogens as well. There's a lot of research done as using slow sand filters for municipal drinking water systems. They remove many other chemical pollutants as well. If they're managed properly, they can be really low maintenance, low resource inputs. The downside is that they're slow, 2.4 to 8 liters per minute per square foot of sand bed area. And for context, a 4-meter diameter tank can treat about 43 to 145 cubic meters per day. So what's needed for slow sand filters? The critical part is the sand grains themselves. They have to be very uniform, typically between 30 to 60 mesh sand grains. These particles then would be about 0.3 to 0.425 millimeters. Highly uniform, very high uniformity coefficient. Round sand grains are preferred. Sharp sand tends to pack and close up pores. In a slow sand filter system, about a 1 meter of water head above the sand bed is required. It's a gravity-driven system, so that water head helps to push the water through the sand. The sand must stay submerged. It's a biological system, so that sand cannot dry out. And it's best if the sand surface is not disturbed. The sand serves as a surface for biofilms and other microorganisms to form, and if you disturb them, you will affect the treatment efficacy. Flow control is critical to get good treatment. The slower the flow, the better the treatment. It's recommended that the sand depth be about 1 meter deep. Some of the maintenance that might happen includes removing several centimeters of sand to remove that Schmutzdecke, the biofilm layer that might build up so heavily that it will slow flow through the sand. It's recommended that you have at least, in a nursery situation, have at least two filters installed. That way, when maintenance is being conducted on one filter, the other filter can stay in operation. So here's a couple of pictures of some installations. This one's a smaller one at Bearwood Tree Farms in Southern California. Near Ventura, you can see that they use septic tanks. It's a really neat system because as capacity, the need for capacity increased, they could just install more septic tanks. You can see that this one tank is, I estimated, can treat about 4,500 gallons in a day. Here's a system installed at in the UK. In the center there, the tank is, I think, about a 3-meter diameter tank, and it can treat about 60,000 gallons per day. And here's a picture of an installation going on in Germany, a very large system, and it'll treat about 350,000 gallons a day. So it's highly scalable from very small to very large. So I'll describe to you our systems that we use for our research. We built them out of 4-inch PVC pipe because the parts are really readily available. Pipe's really easy to handle. And you can see that we essentially, where's my cursor here? There it is. Had two sections. We put a flange in the section in the center so that we can break it apart and actually look at the sand surface. You can see here in this particular system, cursor. There it is. So there's a sampling port right here just above the sand surface, so that would be our pretreatment sample. In this system, every 20 centimeters through the sand bed, we install the sampling port so we can extract water from within the sand bed. We wanted to see what was happening within the sand. And way down at the bottom, there's another sampling port. That would be our post-treatment sample. This symbol, cursor, there it is. This symbol right here represents a needle valve for flow control with a rotameter to measure the flow. And here's Mike Harris setting up, he set up 15 different columns, and he's adjusting the flow. And you can see down at the bottom of the picture, he has a Whirlpak bag set up to collect samples. I need to describe to you a little bit about the biological part of the system. We had plants growing on benches in a shade house nearby, on trays. We irrigated the plants, captured the irrigation water into tanks, inoculated that captured water with zoospores of Phytophthora capsici, and then we introduced that water to these 15 columns. In the Whirlpak bags, we would take an aliquot of those, several aliquots from each sample, filter them, plate them on selective media, count colonies, and then calculate CFU or colony-forming units per milliliter. So keep in mind this picture on the right, the sampling valve at the top is pretreatment. The sampling valves each 20 centimeters, and the bottom one is the post-treatment one, and kind of lay it on its side and on top of these bars. So the salmon bar is the sampling port, the pretreatment sampling port. The lavender bar closest to us would be the post-treatment sampling bar. You can see the CFU, the coliform units that were recovered one day after we introduced the Phytophthora. So these are relative counts, and the counts are relative to the value of from the pretreatment counts. And then here's the time course. And you can see that within 14 to 21 days, we get a really significant amount of reduction. And you can also see that most of that treatment happens in that top, within that top 20 centimeters of the sand bed. Eric Lee did another set of experiments where he had two sets of columns. In one set, group one, the red, he introduced Phytophthora capsici. In another group, in the blue, he introduced Fusarium oxysporum. What we found with the Phytophthora columns, within 14 to 21 days, we get nearly complete removal. We did not get removal of Fusarium after 7 weeks. And then what Eric did was, on those columns, he switched the inoculum. In group one, provided with Phytophthora, he put Fusarium, and vice versa on group two. What we found in the group two column, even though they were initially exposed to Fusarium, they were capable of removing Phytophthora. The group one columns were not capable of removing Fusarium. Then we wanted to simulate what would happen if this was a system at a nursery. What would happen if the pumps failed? What happens if the water was not provided to the columns? So we essentially just turned the pumps off for 7 days. I have to let you know that the sand beds were maintained submerged. The water head had drained through, but they were still submerged under a few centimeters of water. And then after 7 days, we turned the pumps back on, and we continued to sample for and test for Phytophthora fusarium. And what we found was that the group two columns Immediately we're able to remove fusarium. Again, the group one columns were not able, I'm sorry, the group two columns were able to remove Phytophthora. The group one columns were not able to remove fusarium. Deb Matthews asked us, well, can these remove viruses? And I said, well, there's a lot of papers that show that they remove human viruses, so why not plant viruses, right? So we set up this system at South Coast Research and Extension Center. You can see the pepper plants growing in the front, in the columns towards the back. We didn't know if this was going to work, so we did a pilot study with just a single column, and we inoculated the water in the column with tobacco mosaic virus, and we did find that after about 9 weeks, we did get removal of TMV, and we really hammered the columns with a really high amount of TMV. So we added we added the purified TMV columns directly to the columns. We collected water samples weekly, including just before we added the TMV. We tested by both ELISA and bioassays. In the bioassays, we both used leaf assays used with Nicotia glutinosa and Chenopodium quinoa. And in the whole plant assays, we used Nicotiana tabacum and Nicotiana benthamiana. In the end, we ended up just doing the whole plant assays. They were much easier to do. Again, as I described, after 9 weeks, we found that the pilot study removed the TMV, and in our replicated study, it took about 6 weeks. So I'm going to show you some of the data from the bioassays from the replicated study. We only did three replicates. With virus work, you don't need a lot of replicates, and it was pretty scary for me, but Deb said three was fine, and it turned out to be okay. So in this, you can see the three columns. NB is Nicotiana benthamiana test results. NT is Nicotiana tabacum. Negative zero is day zero before adding TMV. We did not recover any, of course. Good thing, right? After 24 hours, you can see we had positive results in all of the plants and all of the columns. And here's the time course. You can see at week six, we started seeing negatives, all columns, both plants, and it continued on. We kept collecting samples to make sure that the treatment was stable, and you can see that it was stable for through 12 weeks. We switched topics a little bit after talking with Sarah. We wanted to find out if we coupled slow sand filters with a vegetated filter, can we increase the efficacy? Can we increase flow rates? That was our main objective, to see if we can increase flows. So we came up with this set of experiments where we had these tanks. We put cannas in the tanks. Captured runoff, again, inoculated with Phytophthora, introduced those to the tanks, then took that water from a single tank, and that water went to a single column. So we paired the tank, vegetated and slow sand filters, and then we collected data from our samples from four different points, before the tanks, after the vegetated filter, before the column, and then after the column. In the first set of experiments, the control was essentially providing the water directly to the column, bypassing the vegetated filter. The test was going through the vegetated filter. And here's a picture with, on the left, Grant Johnson is collecting samples out of the vegetated filters, and on the right, Bruno there is peeking around the sand filters, also helping with the collection. Again, one of these vegetated filter tanks is coupled to a single sand filter, so they're isolated systems. I won't show you the data, but we did see that there was a big benefit, but we weren't sure if it was because of the plant or the tank or what. So what we did was we did another set of experiments where we had 10 sets of these systems, five with plants, five without plants. And you can see we coded the systems that were vegetated the sampling port before the vegetated filter is VFB, after VFA. CCVFB is coupled column with the vegetated filter before, and CCFA coupled column with the vegetated filter after. And here's our data. This came out to be really interesting. I don't know how visible this is on that chart, but you can see that these again are relative counts or relative values. The orange bar are the values before the vegetated filter, and all the subsequent values are after that. So right away after week one, we are seeing a huge reduction in Phytophthora after the vegetated filter, and then going into the sand filter, the counts were low, and then coming out at the end. This computer's going nuts over here, but fortunately it's not over there. And in the end, there was really low to no recovery after the sand filters. An interesting thing here, too, is that the recovery out of the sand filters was almost immediately. We didn't need the 15 to 21 days to get that establishment, if you will. So, and this is without the plants. And so the data with the plants is pretty similar. In week four, we have that one anomaly. But if you ignore that anomaly, the pattern is pretty much the same as without the plants. So we're not sure if it's because of the plants or just because of the tanks now. And this is really preliminary data. I haven't even had time to do any statistics on it. That's the next step is to go through and do the analyses. So conclusions that we've had, they can remove Phytophthora species, not just P. capsici. We did do a study that I didn't discuss where we established sand filters against P. capsici and then introduced water that contained up to 10 species, creek water that contained up to 10 species, and we recovered no Phytophthora. So we know that they are very efficient about removing Phytophthora. They do need extra attention to removing Fusarium. There are reports that they can remove Fusarium, but they may require priming with Fusarium cell wall material to get the biofilm to become established, or just a lot of time, up to 6 months. They can remove TMB very well, and because they remove TMB, they probably remove most other plant viruses. TMB is considered the tank, the most robust of the plant viruses. And then they may be more effective when coupled with vegetated filters or maybe just some kind of a settling pond system, or some other pre-treatment. And that's what I have for you today. And we have time for questions.
We've got time for one or two
questions.
Any questions?
John? No, that was one of the, when we first started this project, we collaborated with somebody in civil environmental engineering who studies this, and I asked him that exact question, and he goes, no, you don't have to inoculate them. The way he explained it is that if there's a high energy chemical bond, there will be a microorganism that will appear to exploit that energy. So it's kind of a magic system. It's really cool. Anything else? Yes.
So, of course, I'm interested in the Fusarium versus Phytophthora question. So, one of the big differences between true fungi and oomycetes, well, there's a lot of differences, but
yep. That's exactly why we chose these two organisms. Fusarium is chitin, cell wall material, beta glucans for Phytophthora.
And so I wonder if the